Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also pick it up on numerous platforms, Spotify, Podomatic, Amazon, and a whole bunch of others. Well, some great news. I wasn't able to get a show done this past Monday because about 10:30 in the morning, right before I was going to do the recording, I got a call from one of our attorneys at Liberty Counsel, Roger Ganim, who said that we won our case. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled 9-0 in favor of Shurtleff et al. Versus City of Boston et al. This is the Christian flag lawsuit that I've been mentioning, and I'm going to, there we go. We have to have an applause. There we go. Yes. So let me give a little background, and of course I've discussed this. This case goes all the way back to 2017. So it was June, it was a day in June where an inner city pastor, Bruce Wall, invited me to participate in a prayer meeting in the office of the mayor at that time in the city of Boston. In this case, it would be Marty Walsh, or as Joe Biden calls him, Walsh Marty. Marty was nowhere to be found, and he didn't sponsor the prayer meeting. It was sponsored by Pastor Wall. And I was so impressed because at this meeting, we had whites, blacks, Hispanics, Asians. The true church is diverse, not diverse in necessarily political views, and that's sometimes the case. But this was the body of Christ doing what we're mandated to do in the Bible, is to pray for our leaders. We don't necessarily have to agree with our leaders. We don't have to particularly like our leaders, but we're told to pray for them. So we prayed for peace. We prayed for harmony. We prayed for safety. We prayed for reconciliation. There were some testimonials. We sang some hymns. And leaving that place, I was very encouraged. And at the same time, I said, you know, the body of Christ in Boston, and of course, not just the city of Boston, but in the general area, needs to be a little more proactive when it comes to exclaiming Christ and promoting the gospel. And so I say my inner P.T. Barnum, but it really wasn't my inner P.T. Barnum. It was the Holy Spirit that said we need to fly the Christian flag on Boston City Hall Plaza. Now, a little background, the City Hall, Boston City Hall Plaza did have a program where they allowed civic organizations and sometimes just individuals to fly a flag and have a ceremony. And I think it started, probably in 2007 or so, somewhere around there. And there were over 287 flag-raising ceremonies where they flew 50 different flags. And one of those flags, prior to our denial of our permit to fly the Christian flag, was the Gadsden flag, where we had no problems flying the flag. I called up the lady that was in charge of the permitting and filled out the form. And it was, I think, 2013 or 2014, where we held a ceremony and flew the Gadsden flag. And actually, that flag stayed up there for about a week. And I had a friend of mine who used to work for the city to retrieve it because it cost a couple hundred bucks. It was a 4x8 flag. It was a good-sized flag. So anyway, so I spoke to the same lady. She was the daughter-in-law of the late Mayor Maya Menino. And I told her what I wanted to do. I said, we wanted to be able to fly the Christian flag. And I believe in the email to her, I sent her a picture of the flag. I can't be certain, though. And I said, we wanted to have a ceremony to commemorate the Constitution Day or somewhere around that. I think that particular year, I think Constitution Day fell on either a Saturday or a Sunday. And we wanted to have a program before lunch or after lunch on a weekday. And I said, not only do we want to fly the Christian flag, but we're going to have a few speakers. One of them would be Reverend Stevie Kraft, our camp chaplain, who was going to give a little talk about the need for racial harmony. And then we have another one of our instructors, Pastor William Levy, who was originally from the South Sudan, now a U.S. citizen, was going to talk about the blessings of liberty. Richard Howell, who is a historian, a friend of ours, he was going to talk about Boston's rich Christian history from John Winthrop's famous sermon on the Arbella, City Set on a Hill, to the visit of Pope John Paul II, and a lot in between. And unfortunately, and I was going to give a talk on the Constitution, and the ceremony would have lasted probably 45 minutes to an hour, and we would have had the flag on that flagpole probably a very short time, probably no longer than a couple of hours. Or we could have left it up there for a few days or until the next group had their flag-raising ceremony. But so I didn't submit the permit at this point. I was on the phone, and I didn't hear back. And so it was like 2 weeks before I followed up. Usually this, you get the permit in 2 or 3 days, and if there's another group using that at that time, obviously they'd have to either reschedule. So a number of emails between us, and finally I got a call. I remember where I was. I was bringing a homeschool family touring the city of Boston, and we were in Charlestown near Old Ironsides. And this lady who I think she was supportive, but it was out of her hands. She said, they've denied your permit. I'm sorry. She says, I don't think this is the end of it. And I said, okay. I said, could I get an official response either in an email or a letter? And within a short time, it may have been that same afternoon, I got an email from Mr. Rooney, who was her boss. And in the email, and I'm not reading it verbatim, but the email said that separation of church and state, can't fly religious flags. But we might be able to, if you have another flag in mind, a secular flag, you can, we'll consider that. And so I got back and I said, no, of course, when we want to fly the Christian flag, and that's it. One of the ironic things is that embedded in the email was the city of Boston's official seal, which is also on the city's flag. And in the seal is a Bible verse from 1 Kings, and it's in Latin, so most people can't read it, but you can look at it and find, you can copy it down and get a quick translation. It reads, may God favor us as he favored our forefathers. Sadly, I don't think God is favoring Boston these days. When I got the email, I knew we had a case. This notion of separation of church and state is a bogus concept. It is not found in the Constitution. The First Amendment says that there are five clauses of the First Amendment. And the part in question here was where Congress says, where it reads, Congress cannot establish nor deny the exercise of religion or the free exercise of religion. So they can't establish a church, nor can they deny the free exercise thereof. That's it. Pretty simple. So that means that Congress cannot establish the Catholic Church as the official church of the United States, or the Pentecostal Church, or the the Latter-day Saints, or any group. However, when the First Amendment was passed back in the 1790s, 1791, I believe, there were some states that had state churches, including Massachusetts. And Massachusetts did not get rid of its official state church status until 1833. That was a long time afterwards. And there was no ACLU at that time to demand that Massachusetts lose its official state church status. It was a congregational church, by the way. And I don't think there should be a state church. In fact, that was one of the things that we kind of brought over from Europe, and it took a little bit longer to get rid of. The taxpayers should not have to pay to support a church which they don't belong. And even if they do belong, they should be up to them what they give, not up to the state to make sure you pay your tithes to the church. So, and I actually think it's harmful when they do this. I don't think it advances freedom or religious freedom at all. But the founders, and this was a generation later, maybe a generation and a half later, kind of got it right. And we appreciate that. But the First Amendment had no bearing on that. And this is where people, and there are some people that think the city was biased against us, maybe theologically, either that because we're conservative Christians or Protestant Christians. Actually, we are not Protestant Christians. We are, Camp Constitution is non-denominational. We enjoy the support of Christians from various denominations, the Catholic Church. And I know there are some Catholics that don't consider themselves a denomination, but just for the sake of argument, we have always had Catholics and Protestants of various denominations, as well as even those who may not be a church group, a church related. We had a family last year. The mom said, you know, we're not very religious. I said, I think you'll still enjoy it. And by the third or fourth day of last year, she said that the camp far exceeded her expectations. And we had a Jewish family that originally from Russia, and they had a great time. And they were the first to sign up for this year's camp. So that's where we are. You know, we are Christ-centered. We do believe that rights come from God. We believe that Jesus Christ is, you know, the salvation is through Jesus Christ. But there are people who, not everybody who comes to camp necessarily shares that view, but most of them do, and all the staff does. So anyway, I sent out a news release. I think it was that evening. And the news release went to local media, probably, I don't know, about 25, 30 TV stations, radio stations, and not one responded. Not one took any interest. Who cares? It's a non-issue at that point. But a friend of mine, Lynn Roberts, she with Second Amendment Sisters, she got the email and she suggested that I contact Liberty Council, which is a legal group based out of Florida, founded by Matt Staver, who used to be Liberty University's head law school chief. I forget what his title was. And I went to their website and had their little contact information and put in what was going on. And I got a call the very next day, the very next morning, from Richard Mast, who is based in Lynchburg, Virginia. And it's his job to kind of screen what cases they take. And I understand that they have a criteria for the case. First one is the case winnable? The second one, will it set a precedent? And the third one, is the individual or organization credible? And I like to think that we easily met all three requirements. So within a few days, the Liberty Council sent a demand letter to the city of Boston and giving the city 30 days to respond. And the demand letters basically said that we need to fly this flag. You're violating my camp constitutions and Hal Shurtleff's First Amendment freedom of speech. And if we don't hear from you, we're going to file a lawsuit. So 30 days went by. It made all the media, made local media, made some national media. WorldNet Daily published it. It didn't make as much as we've had in the last 6 months, but it did make its share and front page of the Boston Herald, which is the second largest newspaper in New England, had no fly zone, and it had a picture of the Christian flag. So it took another year, back July, because these things take time. And Liberty Council, while they do a great job, they're limited. They don't have an unlimited amount of attorneys to file these suits. So it was July of 18, a suit was filed in Boston's district court, and we had our first hearing in August, early August of that year. In fact, we were actually at camp, and myself and a few others, we had to get up at O'Dark 30 to drive from Pittsfield, Massachusetts, where the camp was at that time, to Boston to sit in. And I didn't really have anything to say. I just sort of sat in and listened to the city's attorneys and our attorneys. And we were denied it was an injunction, I think. We were denied that, and then it was appealed to the First Circuit Court of Appeals. We lost that. Then Liberty Council got more information. They got information about all the other ceremonies and all the things that they would fly, all the different types of flags. Some of the flags had religious images. They make reference to the Bunker Hill flag, which resembles the Christian flag, except the colors are reversed. And it's a pine tree hanging on the cross, hanging on the horizontal bar of the cross. And they made reference to, the Portuguese flag that is just rich with Christian symbolism, et cetera, et cetera. And now I subsequently learned that, back in 1979, when Pope John Paul II visited the city of Boston, he held a mass, and mass is a religious service on Boston Common, which is city property. And during the service, the Vatican flag flew over on Boston's property. It flew on one of the flagpoles, not at City Hall Plaza, but Boston Common. And so that's an example of a Christian flag definitely flying on city property. So anyway, that was filed and denied at the Circuit Court of Appeals. So I think it was June of last year when the case was appealed to the Supreme Court. And that was the intention all the way. Liberty Counsel was determined to win this case. They did a Herculean effort. If you go to our blog, just a few days ago, I posted the Liberty Counsel's news release on this with my comments. And it had all the links, all the various decisions at every level, links to video interviews. I mean, it's just incredible. It would probably take a couple of weeks to take it all in if you are inclined to do that. And there are a lot of people out there that are real legal eagles, or legal beagles, I guess is what they call them. They're really either they're attorneys or they just have a real appreciation of how the law works, and they're really into it. And I haven't even read the decision. I read a portion of it. It's only 49 pages. So in June, actually, it was Jonathan Alexander of Liberty Counsel, who's one of our instructors, that actually hand delivered the case to the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court only takes about 1% of the 800 or so cases they get every year. So they get less than 80 a year they take. I mean, there's only 9 of them, and there's only so much they could do. And in most cases, they just say, let the lower case decision stand. And that's how it usually is. And that's probably the right way to do it. So it was September 30th of last year that they took our case. And that made a lot of news, just the fact that they would take it. And in order for them to take the case, they need 4 justices to sign off on it. And that doesn't even mean the 4 justices are necessarily going to vote in favor of it, but they just think there's enough merit for it to be discussed at the Supreme Court or to be heard by the Supreme Court. They set the oral argument for January 18th, and we went down, my wife, Reverend Stevie Kraft, or Edith Kraft, our junior camper director, I should say, and a bunch of others, a lot of our camp people, Barbara from Harlem, Bibi, her daughter, and we had a lot of people there. We had a prayer vigil the evening before, and then in the morning we had a rally, and there were lots of people at the rally, heads of organizations, the Frederick Douglass Society, several pro-life groups, Focus on the Family, Young Women for America. It was very, very encouraging. And after the rally, we went to Liberty Counsel's D.C. building, which is right behind the Supreme Court, where we listened to the oral argument. Only the attorneys were allowed in to the Supreme Court building inside. And a couple of the attorneys there, Roger and Henry of Liberty Counsel, were kind of really, I'm kind of looking at, their take on it. And they were really encouraged. Even the liberal justices were even siding with us. And I think Clarence Thomas, when the city attorney made reference to inclusivity, they wanted all groups of people. And Clarence Thomas said something like, you mean limited inclusivity? In other words, Christians aren't allowed to participate. Everybody else but Christians. And while Boston is not going to be accused of being a Bible Belt, there's still a lot of Christians there. And I says there's a gauge. I think in 16 and 20, Donald Trump got about 20% of the vote in Boston. That doesn't mean they're all born-again Christians or devout Christians or good Catholic faithful people, but it's an indication that it's not exactly an atheist, it's populated by atheist only or far leftist. So there is a conservative element in Boston. In fact, when over the years living in Boston, we would do on occasion, I'd do a political standout with a sign and people would drive by and we usually got more thumbs up than thumbs down or more right-ons and horns beeping than we got middle fingers and profanity. So there are a lot of conservatives. I remember a Democrat guy that I knew since I was a young boy. He's now an attorney and he kind of looked at me. We were in a restaurant. I didn't meet him. He happened to see him in a restaurant and he's looking around and he says, I don't know any, I'm a Democrat and I don't know any of my Democrat friends that voted for Hillary. I thought it was pretty interesting. So we were told that the decision would be rendered by the no later than the end of June when they're in recess for the summer. And some of the court pundits, court watchers predicted a 9-0 victory in our favor. And so I thought, okay, well, we'll see what happens. And just last weekend, there was a few articles that popped up. Newsweek, I think, ran an editorial the Manhattan Institute did a story and a couple of Notre Dame law school a professor and I think a student wrote about the case, and they thought the Supreme Court would rule in our favor. So Monday I got word that the case was decided in our favor 9-0. And that's why I couldn't do a show. As I'm on the phone, I'm getting calls from all of the local Boston media that, you know, 5 years ago weren't interested, but now it's a big deal because the case was won. The local ABC, NBC, CBS affiliate interviewed me. And these interviews were brief, you know, 2 or 3, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. We also were on the Boston's NPR, WMUR. They interviewed me. Newsweek interviewed me. This would have not have been an audio interview, I think, just on the phone. Then I got a call from, Liberty Counsel got a hold of us and said, can I come on Fox and Friends? We did that the next day at 5:20 in the morning. Newsmax got a hold of us, and I did that interview Monday evening at after 10 o'clock, the Rob Schmidt show. Of course, I like Newsmax. I watch it somewhat on a somewhat regular basis. Also, the Dan Ray show. Dan is a popular talk show host in Boston, the evening program, and WBZ, and that's a Clear Channel station that goes all over the country at night, you know, when you all the other stations power down. So that's a powerful signal. And I think practically every then I also did Alex Newman's show on Frank's speech and the Tamara Scott show on Frank's speech. And I think I did a few others. And practically every single media outlet in the country and other parts of the world covered the story. And it was interesting. I was waiting to get onto Newsmax. We're doing the Skyping in. And that's when I heard about this this Roe v. Wade notes that were released. And I thought, oh, this is going to bump us out. And I'm waiting to get in. So the producer says, would I be willing to comment about the Roe v. Wade issue? And I said, oh, of course I would, but I prefer just to stick with the flag case. So we get on, and Rob, he asked me about the Roe v. Wade. And I had just, Governor Huckabee was just on a few minutes before me. And pretty much I piggybacked what Governor Huckabee said, that this releasing of this information of the majority opinion that would favor the case in Missouri. Is Missouri or Mississippi? I think it was Missouri. I said that this will not overturn. I mean, it may overturn Roe v. Wade. It will bring it back to the states. And that's where the battle really should be fought. And that was Ron Paul's position years ago. And some pro-life people didn't like him for that. He said, you know, yeah, we'd love to see it. Or we'd love to see it overturned. We'd love to see it made illegal through an amendment. That's going to be kind of difficult to do because of our moral state today. Hopefully that will change. However, there are certain states that would make it illegal and certain states that will not. And that's really the way to go, I think. And I think many people in the pro-life movement now see that. You see a number of states passing bills that restrict it, further restrict it. And these are all steps in the right direction. ultimately, we'd like to see it banned in the whole country. But some states will make it illegal and some states won't. So all these lefties that are screaming bloody murder, the world's coming to an end, fascism around the corner. If you live in a what they call a blue state, you probably don't have to worry about it anytime soon. New York State, Massachusetts, California, and many states in between, abortion will be alive and well. It'd be okay to kill your baby up until the ninth month, even after the baby's born. In some places, they call it comfort care. Well, we don't want this baby. Just put the little thing aside and let it die, a slow death. They call that comfort care. That's how evil it is. So, and you know, I see all these screaming leftists and these politicians. Chuck Schumer, he uses the word abomination to describe a Supreme Court decision. They're protesting. They want to burn the Supreme Court down. And Elizabeth Warren is talk about conspiracy theories. The Republicans have been doing this for years to undermine a basic human right. It's such baloney. The Roe v. Wade decision is the abomination. It should have never been made decided. In fact, the Supreme Court should have just said, we're not hearing this. The baby was already born before the case ever got to the Supreme Court, and that should have been the end of it. And by the way, a Supreme Court decision should only affect the case itself, not the whole country. And I hope that's what's going to happen. And I hope there'll be other things that the Supreme Court has ruled on incorrectly that will be overturned in the next couple of years. And, you know, because the left now wants to pack the Supreme Court. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, because it works both ways. Yeah, Biden can put his people in, and then if the Republicans capture the White House, then they could have 1,000 people in the Supreme Court. So that's not the way to go. I think our founders did a good job when they created Congress. They created the executive branch and the judicial, and the judicial is the least powerful, and their decisions are not supposed to be law. And their decisions should not overturn law. In fact, the Supreme Court does not have an enforcement mechanism. The enforcement mechanism is the executive branch. And so if the Supreme Court said we're going to overturn whatever law a certain state has, then it's up to the Attorney General to enforce that law. So it's not likely. That's the issue. In fact, when the Obergefell decision that said it was okay for same-sex marriage. And in Kentucky, there was Kim Davis said, I'm not going to issue a marriage license. She said, it's against state law and it's against my beliefs. I can't do it. So the Attorney General sent out some marshals to arrest her and they put her in a county prison. I think if that sheriff in that county was on the ball, he would have arrested the marshals and build the U.S. government, said, this is not your jurisdiction, get out. So we need to see more of that. We need to see some courageous local leaders, statewide leaders and county leaders step up to the plate and say, no, not in my county, not in my town, not in my state. And we're seeing that, of course, in Florida and Texas and other places. And we're just delighted about this case in our favor. We think it will set a precedent, and it won't just be about flags. It might be where a liberal leftist principal says to the student, you can't bring in candy canes. It's a violation of the First Amendment. Well, no, guess what? We can bring in candy canes, and we can fly a Christian flag on City Hall Plaza if that particular city has a flag-raising ceremony. The city of Boston, I think, has already discontinued or suspended their flag-raising ceremony and will probably not resume it. And that's their prerogative. And some states and some towns and cities, what they will be doing, and some already have done, is that they have an ordinance that says the only flags we fly are the U.S. flag, the state flag, the town flag, and maybe a few others. And that's probably the right way to go. Anyway, thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Sherliff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.